भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading this morning from Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text number 26. A little contrast from what we've been doing, but it does fit. Chapter 7 is scheduled incarnations. It parallels chapter 3 of Canto 1. Both of those chapters are response from chapter 3 in Canto 1 is Sutta Goswami responding to the sage's question about, please describe the forms of the Lord as they appear within this world. And that reminds me, today I'm going to be sending out the six questions, six answers, and that's one of the six questions from chapter 1. Please describe those forms of the Lord as they appear within this world. So Sutta obliges that question in chapter 3. Canto 1. This is Canto 2, where Shukadeva Goswami is also addressing the same question. And the verse that we're reading this morning is Janmadiyasya Yataha. It's the appearance of Krishna, etc., his pastimes. And the translation reads, when the world is overburdened by the fighting strength of kings who have no faith in God, the Lord, just to diminish the distress of the world, he descends with his plenary portion, singular. That's Krishna and Balaram. The Lord comes in his original form with beautiful black hair. Now, we normally think of hair as something that's part of material form, whatever the color is. But it's the other way around. These forms are reflections of his form, and his form has beautiful black hair. Sita Krishna Keshaha, beautiful black hair. And just to expand his transcendental glories, he acts extraordinarily. No one can properly estimate how great he is. So I'm going to read the purport and emphasize a few points. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse is especially describing the appearance of Lord Krishna and his immediate expansion, Lord Baladeva. Lord Krishna and Lord Baladeva are one supreme personality of Godhead. What does that mean? There's two forms. There's two names. There's two personalities. Not my vad. Here he explains. The Lord is omnipotent, and he expands himself in innumerable forms and energies, and the whole unit is known as the Supreme Brahman. Wow, that sounds like really impersonal, right? It's all one. And what is that one? Supreme Brahman. Not impersonal. Such extensions of the Lord are divided into two divisions, namely personal and differential. Like an automobile part, a differential. What does a differential do in an automobile? Yeah. The drive shaft is going this way and the wheels are going that way. The differential converts this motion into that motion. So here, differential is meaning the living entities, his separated parts and parcels, or minute parts and parcels, differential, or vibhu and anu, whole and apart. The personal expansions are called Vishnu tattvas, and the differential expansions are called Jiva tattvas, and in such expansional activity, Lord Baladeva is the first personal expansion of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, indicating the whole unit is known as one Supreme Brahman in capital letters. Supreme Brahman. This is very much like what's coming up in the ninth chapter, where the first of the Chatur Sloki verses in the Bhagavatam is Aham Evasam Evagre, which is before creation I alone exist, during cosmic manifestation I alone exist, and after annihilation I alone exist. So the emphasis is upon, in that verse, the non-difference between Krishna and everything that emanates from Krishna. So, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pravartate. Another way that can be taken also is, I alone exist. Whatever is the direct expansion of Krishna is Krishna. Especially with regard to the plenary expansions. They're fully Krishna. But then, technically, not exactly fully Krishna. Not fully Krishna in the sense that Krishna is the source, and they're an emanation. And then another distinction, that is, there are four unique qualities that Krishna has that the Vishnu Tattva expansions do not have. But Balaram is like Krishna. He also has very loving pastimes with devotees. He also has his Rasa Lila. Our acharyas describe it's a different set of gopis. But he has Rasa Lila. And another difference is that his mood is servant, and he regards Krishna as master. So, allowing for those transcendental distinctions, we can also make the statement, as Prabhupada is doing here, they are one, Supreme Personality of Godhead, allowing that there are these transcendental distinctions, even we're saying they are one. They're one in category, and they're one for the most part, certainly not the same as the energies of the Lord, because Balaram is not an energy, Balaram is a plenary expansion. But the differential expansions, they are energy, they're not the energetic, they're para-prakriti. So we'll continue. In the Vishnu Purana, as well as Mahabharata, both Krishna and Baladeva are mentioned as having beautiful black hair, even in their advanced age. The Lord is called, in this verse, Anupalaksha Margaha, or, in still more technical terms, what's not in this verse, Avan Manasa Gochara, which means one who is never to be seen or realized by the limited sense perception of the people in general. So, Anupalaksha, in the word for word, is rarely to be seen. And Margaha is path, mark. Anupalaksha Margaha, rarely to be seen. we were reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur described that even when Kamsa saw Krishna, he didn't see as the devotees see. He didn't see Swarup. Here is a transcendental spiritual form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He didn't see that way. For that matter, he couldn't see that way because of his inimical attitude. Krishna, by his Yogamaya influence, concealed his identity, and he revealed something else. Oh, he's a powerful living entity like me, who am a powerful living entity, a competitor, powerful living entity. He's my enemy. One couldn't see the Supreme Personality of Godhead and still be, you know, willing to fight him or oppose him. One cannot see him as all powerful and so forth. You know, it's subject to my power against his power. That's the covering of Maya. So anupalaksha margaha, or avan manasa gochara. So that's directly within this verse. In the translation, no one can properly estimate how great he is. The classic Dr. Frog example. How big is the ocean? Is it this? One can't estimate that which is unlimited. However expert one may be at estimating things, it's just not possible. Because it's in another dimension. The reality of Krishna is another dimension. The mind cannot enter into that dimension. Vedas teach us that. He's beyond the limits of the mind. Yet at the same time, we're to fix our mind upon Krishna. So, that's possible through mercy. It's not possible by effort alone. The mechanical process of yoga, it's not possible. Even in the mechanical process of yoga, or dhyan yoga, it's still dependent upon the Lord choosing to make himself visible. The yogi is searching and searching and searching and searching with great concentration for that form of the Lord. And it'll be a futile search if the Lord doesn't manifest himself within the mind of the yogi. And when he does, it's ecstatic. Like Dhruva's experience. He was experiencing ecstasy. It wasn't on the strength of his effort. It was the Lord decided to make himself manifest. And when the Lord decided to not make himself not manifest, Dhruva couldn't see. This is intimately described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita in Tapaloka, where the residents of Tapaloka, they're engaged for long periods of time in absorption and seeing the Supreme Lord in his Paramatma feature. They're very happy seeing the Lord. And after long period of meditation, they take a meditation break and discuss the scripture. These are renunciates, that this is their happiness. And one looks at a renunciate and goes, oh, that's difficult. And the renunciate looks at those that aren't in that position and say, oh, that's very difficult. I wouldn't want that. This is very nice. It's a very simple dividing line between those who should remain celibate and, you know, brahmachari, and those that shouldn't. A brahmachari isn't sitting on the fence looking on this side, looking on that side. Should I get married? Should I remain brahmachari? That's ridiculous. That's not brahmachari. There's no kind that when one is feeling fully satisfied, there's not a question. And if one is not feeling satisfied, there's question, and then within that question is the answer. Belong. here you belong there. Anyway, in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 25, it is said by the Lord, Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha. In other words, he reserves the right of not being exposed to anyone and everyone. He says it the other way around. Only the bona fide devotees can know him by his specific symptoms. Like Gopinathacharya said to Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya, oh my dear brother-in-law, you are such a fool. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is right in your home and you can't recognize it because you're this dry logician. You'll never understand the Personality of Godhead that way. He spoke something very funny. He said, you are like a dry oil cake. I don't know what an oil cake. What good is that logic going to do? You can't even nose in front of your face. But one day, by his mercy, you will come to understand. And later when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came to understand, he gave credit to Gopinathacharya. He blessed me. He said, one day I will come to understand. And so it has come to pass because of his blessing. So there are symptoms of the Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada writes, out of many, many such symptoms, one symptom is mentioned herein, within this verse, that the Lord is Sita Krishna Keshaha, one who is observed always with beautiful black hair. So that doesn't mean that people that don't gray, that's a sign, that's Krishna. But conversely, one of the signs of Krishna is he has this transcendental, not material, beautiful black hair. Both Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev had such hair on their heads. And thus, even in advanced age, they appear like young boys, 16 years old. That is the symptom, that is the particular symptom of the Personality of Godhead. In the Brahmi Samhita, it is stated that although he is the oldest personality amongst all living entities, he always looks like a new youthful boy. That is the characteristic of a spiritual body. What's that verse? Adyam puranam purusham navayovanam cha vedeshu durlabham adurlam. So Adyam, he's Adi, he's the original, he's the oldest. Purusham navayovanam cha. People imitate or wish to imitate their beauty products or their diet and exercise and to remain youthful. They're imitating Krishna, but no good. Because in this world, everything that is born undergoes these other transformations, aging, disease, and death. Certain janma mrityu chara vyadi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. But Krishna, not only he doesn't take birth, he doesn't get old. And even if there are pastimes where he appears to have a headache or to be sick, he's just pretending. He never gets a headache and never gets sick. Not just because, you know, he's a very healthy young boy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anything that appears to be like that, like birth, like dying, like aging, he assumed the form of a little baby at the request of Vasudeva and Devaki. And then he went through what for us is, you know, transformed states of body as the body is growing or transforming. But Krishna could change his form as he liked. Just like he became a small baby in the prison house of Kamsa. There are pastimes. We went to Bandiravan in Vrindavan. Such a nice pastime in Bandiravan, where Krishna, just a small boy, and Radharani, at the request of Nanda Maharaj, in a big storm, they were heading back for Nandagram, and they both assumed a youthful form, their Kishore Rup. And the demigods came and performed marriage. And then they left. And then they assumed again a small childlike form. Or in the birthplace of Srimati Radharani and Ravel, when Narada Muni came to see Radharani, the eternal consort of Krishna, in a little, several days old, only golden child, she manifested her Kishorup in the house of Rishabhanu in Kirtida. Then again, childlike form. It's not like imagination, it's not mystic. It's the Lord is manifesting according to the love of his devotee. This is described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita also, that the particular form that the Lord sees in the spiritual world is according to the particular mood of love of the devotee. It's almost like the love of the devotee controls the Lord, and he shows that form, that they have particular affinity and affection for. This is a little technical. In the course of reading Srimad Bhagavatam, I forget which particular verse, but there was this discussion came up about the form of Lord Nisringadev. And is the form of Lord Nisringadev as it appeared before that form appeared before Hiranyakashipu, is that form of Lord Nisringadev present in Vaikuntha? Because Lakshmi had never seen that form before. So is it a particular form of the Lord that's only manifest in worldly lila, where there are demons like Hiranyakashipu? So it appears, this is just a side note and some detail. There was a letter. There's two answers to this. One is yes and the other is no. In the no answer is, in a letter to Ekiani, who was Rupanuga's wife, in way back in 74, Prabhupada described naimitik. You can look it up in folio. Naimitik rup. And naimitik rupas are forms that are occasional. According to a particular circumstance, that form of the Lord manifests. And there's nitya rup, and there's naimitik rup. So Prabhupada there says very clearly, that this form of Lord Nisringadev and others that are also in the naimitik category, they are only in Bhoma Lila. They're not in Vaikuntha. So that's an answer that says no. And in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami, very as clearly as that, says yes. That according to the love and disposition of service towards the Supreme Lord, the Lord shows that form. Part of that discussion comes where Gopal Kumar, he's searching for Madan Gopal. And by the way, Madan Gopal and Madan Mohan are the same. They're just different names, but the same form, the same mood of the Lord. So it's perfectly appropriate that Sanatana Goswami is speaking about or writing about Gopal Kumar, who is searching for Madan Gopal. And that's the same as his worshipable deity, Madan Mohan. So he wants to see that form, and the Lord manifests that form. Madan Gopal. Very, very beautiful, attractive cowherd boy. And that's the form that he meets because he has that strong desire. The Lord shows that form. He shows other forms. But it's such a strong mood, even when Gopal Kumar enters Vaikuntha. And he sees Lord Narayan. And he's been coached by the residents of Vaikuntha how to behave when you come before Lord Narayan. It's the awe and reverence program. You know, you do this, you don't do that. You stand with folded hands. You lower your head. And you speak with great gravity and reverence. Do that. This, you know, exhibition of, you know, the cowherd boy program that you have that doesn't work in Vaikuntha. So as soon as he saw Lord Narayan seated on his transcendental throne, he ran with his arms outstretched, calling, Madan Gopal! Madan Gopal! And the Lord got off his throne and ran to Gopal Kumar and embraced, and they both fell to the ground in a swoon of ecstasy, quite outside of the Vaikuntha mood. So the form of the Lord is not material. It doesn't age. It doesn't take birth. It doesn't die. It doesn't get ill. But the form of the Lord that he manifests for a particular living entity is according to the mood of love and devotion of that devotee. This is because his body is fully spiritual. The material body is symptomized by birth, death, old age, and diseases. But the spiritual body is conspicuous by the absence of these symptoms. Living entities who reside in Vaikuntha Loka, in eternal life and bliss, have the same type of spiritual body without being affected by any signs of old age. Which means, similarly, there's no birth. I've not come across any explanation that describes when living entities go to Vaikuntha, how that happens. Like, suddenly they weren't there and then suddenly they're there. There's no birth. Where's the entry point? Never heard a description. There must be some, like Gopal Kumar, he didn't take birth, he just zoom zoom and landed in Goloka and was wondering, where am I? And nobody asks, who's your mother and father? Where did you take your birth? Anyway, there's no birth and there's no death. There's no aging and there's no disease. It is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, that the party of Vishnu Dutas who came to deliver Ajamila from the clutches of the party of Yamaraj appeared like youthful boys. Youthful boys with four arms. Symbols of Vishnu. They're Vishnu Dutas, but they had symbols of Vishnu. They're not Vishnu, but they were carrying his symbols. And exquisitely beautiful. That the Yamadutas are just the opposite. Extremely ugly. Very fearful in their features. When they saw these beautiful forms, they were taken aback. Who are you? And when they asked Yamaraj, who were they? So beautiful. Collaborating the description of this verse, they were very, very youthful. It is ascertained thus that the spiritual bodies in the Vaikuntha Lokas, either of the Lord or of the other inhabitants, are completely distinct from material bodies of this world. So that he's amplifying this, you know, their symptoms of spiritual form. Therefore, when the Lord descends from that world to this, he descends in his spiritual body of Atmamaya. Atmamaya is a term that's directly in the verse. Atmamaya. Because it's describing a descent of Krishna into this world, his appearance. So he does it, Atmamaya, the implication, that which is conveyed by Atmamaya means it was his own potency. He didn't need help from anybody. Didn't need help from Jasodhananda, didn't need help from Devaki and Vasudev. He didn't need anybody's help. He just, through the agency of his own potency. This question came up over the weekend. Maya can mean illusion, but it also can mean energy, his own energy. Because illusion is part of Krishna's energy. So that's Mahamaya, and then this Atmamaya, his own internal potency. The internal potency and Krishna are inseparable. We can say they're one, but they're different also. So they're inseparable. And his potency acts according to his desire. So if Krishna wants to descend, his potency arranges for him to descend. He doesn't require anything outside of himself. The reason for that emphasis is you can't say that about somebody else. Certainly can't say that about ourselves. If we want something, we require an agency outside of ourselves. Whatever it is that we desire. Walk across the room, you know, blink your eyelid, something very common. Digest your food. We require the agency of some, and if that agency is taken away, we can't walk across the room, we can't blink our eyelid, we can't digest our food. We can't do anything without agency outside of ourselves. And Krishna is just the opposite. He doesn't need any agency outside of himself. That's the message. So form is all spiritual, and what he does is simply his pastime. It's Krishna and his internal potency acting. The Bhagavatam wants us to understand that's the nature of Krishna's pastimes. It's truly pastimes. He's just enjoying. He's not trying to accomplish something by walking across the room or feeling hungry so he has to eat so he can then digest his food and get some strength. He doesn't need to do anything. But whatever he does is simply for his pleasure through the agency of his own potency. Maybe it's obvious, but it's a very important distinction. The nature of the spiritual realm. Now Prabhupada gets heavy. He says, the allegation that the impersonal Brahman appears in the material world by accepting a material body is quite absurd. Therefore, the Lord, when he comes here, has not a material body, but a spiritual body. The impersonal Brahmajyoti is only the glaring effulgence of the body of the Lord, and therefore there is no difference in quality between the body of the Lord and the impersonal ray of the Lord called Brahmajyoti. Final paragraph and conclusion. Now the question is why the Lord, who is omnipotent, comes here to diminish the burden created upon the world by the unscrupulous kingly order. Then he proposes something and rules it out. Certainly the Lord does not need to come here personally for such purposes. You know, the kingly order can be dismissed effortlessly. He doesn't have to come at all. Doesn't even have to wave his hand and dismiss them. He just has to will it, and it's done. But he actually descends to exhibit his transcendental activities. in order to encourage his pure devotees who want to enjoy life by chanting the glories of the Lord. Yes, these other purposes are fulfilled, but they're external to his real purpose. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, texts 13 and 14, it is stated that the Mahatmas, the great devotees of the Lord, take pleasure in chanting of the activities of the Lord. All Vedic literature is meant for turning one's attention towards the Lord and his transcendental activities. Last sentence. Thus the activities of the Lord in his dealings with worldly people create a subject matter for discussion by his pure devotees. So there's the immediate, there are the devotees who are in this world, and they don't just want relief from oppression. They want to enjoy pastimes with Krishna, so he comes and reciprocates with that desire. But it's another happiness of the devotees simply to talk about Krishna. So it provides them wonderful subject matter to talk about. And in vibrating the messages of Krishna, Krishna becomes present. He's manifest in that sound vibration, and thus the devotees can associate with him directly just through sound. And that's their heart's desire, to associate with him, however they can do so. So he provides the means for them to. And there are very unique activities that he performs in his earthly pastimes, such as killing of demons. Because in the spiritual world there's no demons. Or he takes birth. And in the spiritual world there's no taking birth. There's the seeming sense of Mother Jasoda and Nanda, Krishna is our son. Which means Krishna has taken birth. But there's no birth. But just, I forget the Sanskrit term, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur elaborately discusses this in Brahma Samhita. He translates it as seeming error. A Brahma Vilas, I think, is the term. Seeming error. That there's demons. And in the spiritual world, there's no demons, but they have the sense, oh, Aristasura is coming. Krishna, please protect us. The mood, the bhav is there. And it's manifest with Aristasuras and Trinavartas and Pralambasuras and so forth in Krishna's earthly pastimes. So the earthly pastimes are even more attractive in one transcendental sense. At the same, the transcendental sense is there's no difference. Whether there's the bhav without the birth or without the demons, etc. Or with the mood is the same. But the pastimes are very nice. The transcendental happiness. So Krishna makes his, the point that Prabhupada is making here is that Krishna makes his appearance in this world for that purpose, for the delight and pleasure and happiness of his devotees. So they can directly associate with him, and so they can have wonderful topics to discuss, just like we're doing now. Krishna's appearance, his long beautiful hair, his form that never ages, his doing so through the agency of his own internal potency. These glories of Krishna are forever relishable. Okay, I'll end there and see if there's some questions or comments.
So,
of course. There are five direct and seven indirect rasas. And odd reverence is one of the, it's the direct rasa, it's in the category of love. They love Narayan. Or, I'm dutiful. I should pay my respects to Narayan. In that mood. Aishwarya Bhav. the transcendental ecstasy. It's the neutrality. Well, that good point. It's not directly. Dasya Rasa also exists in Vaikuntha, and that's one of the five. And the mood of that love. Thank you for the correction. That mood of that love is in awe and reverence, whereas there's Dasya Rasa outside of Vaikuntha, not in awe and reverence. Then corrected. And the goddess of fortune, she has Madhurya Rasa, but it's awe and reverence. She, what the wives of the Kaliya serpent say is that what Kaliya received, the goddess of fortune, couldn't even Lord placing his feet upon her head. But our husband got this fortune because it's on reverence. It's on reverence is not one of the five. It's the mood. The mood of service permeates all of the four upper rasas. Parents are serving, friends are serving, lovers are serving. On reverence has to do not with service, but a particular mood of service, a particular mood within a relationship.
I wanted to ask you this, but didn't know enough. Verse number 3, we read there are 12 different rasas. And it's, how is that possible in a Vaikuntha? I understand, like, you know, there's...
Let's take Rukmini, for example. She was hearing from Krishna that what she thought was Krishna was going to leave. It was a horrible thought. Or in Prem Sarovar, when Krishna instructs Madhu Mangal to remove the bee, and Madhu Mangal comes back and says Madhu is gone. The horror and dread and terrible emotion of Radha. Krishna's gone. It's a secondary rasa eclipsing the primary rasa. But it's a dimension of the primary rasa in manifested in that mood. So that's how it's described in Nectar Devotion. The secondary rasas predominate a certain mood that seems to eclipse the primary mood, but the primary mood is always present. The conjugal love of Radha for Krishna is always present, but it becomes subjugated by the strength of this other mood. It's transcendental emotion. Yeah, done.
So in Goloka, so like
I don't, I can't, I don't have the knowledge to say that.
Right.
I don't know.
They are also under illusion, right? Like the
Yoga Maya.
That...
Yoga Maya.
Okay.
And they love it.
So it doesn't matter really how they, because
it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's an academic question. At the same time, you know, it's a relishable topic. How does, you know, it can be approached as it that way, academic, and it's another of, yeah. What's the activities of the soul without a body? Same activities as the soul with a body. What's the activities of the soul with a body? What's our constitutional position of the soul? We're servants. More specifically, we're servants of Krishna. We can forget that we're servants of Krishna and try to become servants of Krishna's energy. Or try to become the predominators of Krishna's energy and be an illusion. But still we're serving. We can't move from that position. Embodied or in a spiritual form, we're servants of Krishna. The activity is service to Krishna. With transcendental senses, in transcendental form, transcendental mind, transcendental intelligence. It seems that the what?
Regarding this question, we were discussing.
I heard the first part. It seems that what?
It seems that we...
I'm not sure all of what you said, but the last part was devotional service is the same everywhere. That's your main point. Well, the forms of devotional service will be different The mood may be the same, but the form is according to embodiment. Take an extreme case. In the Dandak forest, Ram met rishis who were very, very advanced in spiritual consciousness. And when they met Ram, they became attracted to Ram in a conjugal mood. Now, how does that manifest? What's all that about? Or Gadadhar Pandit. It's not different than Srimati Radharani. And the activities between Gadadhar Pandit and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not the same as the activities between Krishna and Radharani. But the mood was the same. And so on. So embodiment is not a zero, as appropriate for one's situation. Like yesterday, I was asked to discuss, so I'm going to want to sometime in the future come back, discuss the role of a woman. And the role of a woman is literally that, it's a role. And the role of a man is literally a role. It's not who we are. But there's an appropriate role that's suitable by the Lord's design for us to take. The mood of devotion is the mood of devotion. It may manifest itself in this way or that way, according to embodiment. And there's something that's appropriate, something that's not appropriate, according to our embodiment. Even we're transcendentalists. Yeah. It's not to come to
pride.
So my question is, put on the brakes. At once assume, I mean, transcendental knowledge certainly can help, but not transcendental knowledge always isn't a perfect brake pedal. It's, you know, resume the proper position. Regret that, you know, allowing that entrance of pride in the heart, and take up the position of servant. I've shared this before, but I can share it again. Sridhar Swami, our ISKCON Prabhupada disciple, Sridhar Swami, knew that he had pride. He would sometimes exhibit it, like, you know, speak about how what his IQ was and things like that. You know, a very smart person. But he knew he had that pride, and he knew the problem that pride creates. He shared all of that with me at one point when, because he was living in the Brooklyn Temple and I was living in the Brooklyn Temple at the same time, so we had a lot of association together. It's a lot of very confidential discussions on many things. Something that I never knew that he did until it was Navadvip Mandal Parikrama. I saw Sridhar Swami setting up people's sleeping bags and their mosquito nets, because we had, you know, the sannyasis would stay together. And so I remarked, you know, Maharaj, you know, what are you doing? And he told me what he was doing. He said, I've for some number of years, you know, 4 years, 5 years, I've been following this practice. And he pulled out of his pocket a 3x5 card. And it had, you know, marks 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That system. He said, I deliberately, for years, every day, go out of my way to do something that's an expression of humility, taking a humble position of service unto others in order to check pride. Because I know that's something that I have a tendency towards. And I know how debilitating it is for spiritual life. I'm practicing humble service. Our lives should be a continuous expression of that, but at least, you know, in a vidhi sadhana type of way, 5 times a day, something unseen, unknown by others, very quietly, privately, internally, do something in that mood to serve others. That's a check. It's not a guarantee, but it's a check. It's a cultivation of a particular mood in a conscientious manner. Yes? Two things in response. One is, I had a detailed discussion with Gopi Puranadana at one time. We were referencing and cross-referencing things from scripture and came to the conclusion that all five rasas exist in Vaikuntha. So with all of the rasas, set part two is, with all of the rasas, on reverence predominates. It's a particular mood of love in Vaikuntha. Second. Sure. He does that. You read Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Sanatana Goswami, or read the summary of it in teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and their technical terms for it, where Krishna manifests identical forms to associate simultaneously with his devotees in love. There are leelas that exhibit that, and those forms have specific categories. The technical terms I forget. In the 10th canto, it describes in the morning, the roosters would call, and Krishna would get out of bed and do his morning sadhana. And then all 16,108 Krishnas would assemble into one Krishna and enter into the assembly hall. And then after the assembly hall, Krishna would expand again 16,000 forms and re-enter into the palaces. And he wasn't diminishing himself by doing so, each of those expansions. So for pastime purposes, in Rasa Lila dance, Krishna manifests. That's the same category where Krishna manifested multiple forms of Krishna. A certain category. Or when Krishna was taking, it's another slightly different category. When Krishna was having lunch with the cowherd boys, they had the sense that Krishna is looking at me alone. Or Lord Chaitanya is dancing in kirtan. He's looking at me alone. It was a certain potency or a certain aspect of the Lord's manifestation. So there's all technical terms for all of these things. But in different places, in different, for different, tadekatma rupa or something like that, I think is the, And how many is that? It's finite, but at the same time, incalculable. You say unlimited, infinite. So many you can't count, that many.
Not expanded himself or even some...
It's language. Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses that's the limitations of language. Because it sounds like, you know, before, during, and after. It sounds like time. But it's not. It's the limitations of language to describe something that's beyond language.
So, realms, right? So, they're not... There must be some stuff which is not in the scriptures that, okay, like there is some things that you do, that only some aspects of it that you can never sort of...
Well, it's not, you know, that again, that's a limitation of language. Get there. When in fact, we're there. We're in the spiritual sky. Right now. Doesn't look like it. Looks like Seattle. But we're in the spiritual sky. Literally. I mean, like a cloud is within the sky, and you look out, you're in an airplane, you look out the window, all you can see is the cloud. Well, you're in the sky, which is in the cloud. Excuse me, the cloud was within the sky. So you're within the clouds, you're within the sky. We're in the spiritual sky. This Mahatattva is a small little portion of the vast spiritual sky. And Krishna's in our heart. There's this language we discuss, you know, Krishna enters the heart of his pure devotee. Well, we're not pure devotees, but Krishna's in our heart. He's in our heart as Paramatma. So what's our devotion? According to our devotion, that's revealed. Krishna shows that form. According to our devotion. And our devotion isn't very strong, so we can't see much of anything. But Krishna's there. As Paramatma. So it's not, you know, when you get there. It's, you know, when consciousness becomes purified, Krishna can disclose, you don't have to get there. You can just, presently, Krishna manifests in his form. Within, like Dhruva, within his heart and then outside, directly in front of him. not get there. How long did it take the Lord of Vaikuntha to come before Dhruva? Didn't take any time at all. Because he's all pervasive. It's not, you know, word juggling. It's fact. How far is it between us and Krishna Loka to get there? Faster than the mind. One can get there immediately. Or Krishna manifests himself because he's all pervasive. And he manifests himself according to our devotion, our love for him. Or he conceals himself according to our, you know, snotty attitude towards him. Yes. Okay.
It's all what I'm told.
Okay.
Is that something that you... My,
we're speaking of material personality now, not spiritual?
In the oral personality.
Are we speaking of material personality or spiritual personality? You say overall, I assume whatever they're going to examine at work, it's material. Do our personalities, as they're exhibited in this world, change? As they're exhibited in this world, do they change? What's your sense? Yes or no? Okay. I don't know of anything within Scripture that says yes or no. My experience is there are certain fundamental features that remain continuous, but even they undergo transformation. And there's some other parts of personality that just completely change. Completely change. As the spiritual identity becomes awakened, the configuration of matter changes. Take two more and we'll end. We both had something. Oh, you have something. You didn't speak. Go ahead. Okay. Vaishnava way of appreciating oneself.
For doing particular...
That's good.
Without feeling proud.
That's good. It's the credit goes to... It's when one has the capacity to receive mercy and stays, doesn't go away from the position of being a recipient of mercy, then that's the right position where the enthusiasm and self-generating enthusiasm continues to flow. It's all credit goes to the all-merciful Lord and his devotees. Yeah, but then it'll be dissipated. Then it'll become something other than, you know, a continuing enthusiasm. It'll be pride. And the scriptures warn us.
Because I have this
fear. Well, let's just assume that you're like the rest of us, where there's a mix. There's something very genuine and sincere, and there's something that's, you know, habitually contaminating. There's a mix. Just assume that. Safe assumption. So to be concerned about the contamination tendency is appropriate. But don't get stuck on it either. You strengthen this one and be vigilant at that one. And depend upon mercy to go the whole distance. So this is again on the theme, I'll just be explicit about it, it's the receiving mode. While at the same, because this is our basic teaching. Trying to serve Krishna, depending upon mercy. There's such a strong tendency, a fruitive tendency is so strong, the tendency eclipses the receiving mode. So emphasize the receiving mode. You know, the doing mode is very easy, very conditioned. Out of false ego, primarily. So if the receiving mode, then it checks the false ego. Immediate. It's built in. Because doing will continue. Receiving, intermittent. And chanting is a great daily practice. like, you know, the five little mark, the Sridhar Maharaj's paper. Just do that with your chanting. Every day. For a few hours. Chanting and hearing. Receiving Krishna's mercy. We're making some effort. We're chanting. To keep the mind fixed upon the holy name, that takes some effort. But in the receiving mode, that's already built in. It's a natural combination of effort and mercy. Focus on receiving. I find it very nice and effective. Last question. Wait, he had his hand up before. Yeah, he lost it. No, it's not like, you know, I'm bankrupt, and it's a mood of service, as opposed to a mood of doership. No, we can do service where we're thinking I'm the doer. It's a recipient of, by mercy, I may be, it's like, you know, her statement. There's something that Krishna has given. And if I use that in the mood of service, I'm constantly remembering while doing that, this is mercy. Even if something like, you know, a given. It's a quality or capacity that Krishna has given. It establishes and sustains the mood of service. It's not an empty. It's, you know, and I'm not a non-entity. A recipient, you know, Krishna is very kind. And I'm feeling that kindness of Krishna coming, and I want to use that kindness in serving him. And you don't move from the service mood. You don't waver from the service mood. Because service is who we are. And it's what we do. So now in what will be the mood? In the receiving mood. Mercy. Service. It's a humble mood, always. Always, always, always. If that's the mood in which we do our service. Receiving of mercy. Expression of receiving of mercy. From our constitutional position as humble servant. Okay. Thank you very much, Śrīla Prabhupāda. Ki Jai.